Next is Dr. Venu Akathoda. Venu is Associate Professor and Pain Fellowship Director at University of Colorado School of Medicine. He's triple board certified in PM&R pain medicine and electrodiagnostic medicine as well. He's one of the team physicians for University of Colorado Buffalo's and University of Denver Pioneers. His practice focuses on the non-surgical management of spinal injuries, sports medicine, and injection techniques. He's not only a fellowship director at this time, but he was a former residency program director, correct? Yeah. Here's Venu.
Okay, so you heard a lot about day in the life, and I'll go through a little bit of that, but what I also wanted to focus on is what to expect as you go through the PM&R search process and hopefully getting a good residency, and if we have time, about getting a good fellowship as well. So here are my disclosures, and you know I didn't want to necessarily make it all about unicorns and rainbows and butterflies, but you know I'm very thankful for being a physiatrist, and most of my frustrations are not from being a physiatrist; they're more from the system of healthcare in general. But I'll talk a little bit about that. You know, physiatry is really in my blood. My wife is my sugar mama; she's a physiatrist as well. She's in private practice, so I think I have that private practice perspective because. At least 50% private practice, budding physiatrist there. And then my father is a physiatrist as well. He was a VA physiatrist until I was in eighth grade, and then he went into private practice. So my little brother likes to kid. He's a pulmonary critical care doc in Boston, that he's the black sheep of the family. But actually, it's actually the lawyer, my little brother. So here's my typical week, and I have a very heavy-loaded week in the very front part of the week and less loaded in the back part of the week. So lots of meetings, lots of patients. I really got a lot out of David Allen's book, Getting Things Done. You're really trying to be efficient during your work time because, like everyone else, I like to be home by dinner time and really spending time with the family. So really trying to work hard while you're there. So instead of putting in 60 hours, the 50 hours works and you accomplish the same amount of work. So I think it all depends on your personality. There's some systems issues that may force you to work harder and longer. But in general, you can really manipulate your schedule as a physiatrist to be very efficient if you want it to be. So the other things that that I do and take up actually probably even more time than clinical care is these extracurricular activities because they really eat into your weekends, your late time, your early time, and they're very fulfilling because as an academic person, you're not going to get your reward as with just salary. You're going to get your reward with some of the softer things like educating residents, mentoring other folks, seeing people do a good job, seeing people flourish that you can send patients to. So those soft rewards can really mean a lot, and they actually are the majority of time that you're really spending is on these soft rewards. So as a program director, you know, the things that really take up time, and they come in boluses, the orientation takes time. When you have to come for a review, that takes an extraordinary amount of time, filling out forms and educating your staff and residents about what that process is going to be, how to answer the questions, and so forth. Evaluations take time. The interview season, of course, is a big chunk of time. And then you have to organize things like the call schedule, potentially, the curriculum. These can be handed off to other folks, but it can be a major responsibility because the buck finally stops with you. Unfortunately, I think a lot of what program directorship, if that's your goal as a physiatrist, is putting out fires. So you have to deal with this problem or that problem. And trying to have a stable program, it can be very difficult because you're constantly dealing with putting out fires. But if you have a good system, then really trying to strategically grow, it can happen. I also am a medical director, and I think some people talked about this, but as a medical director, you're coordinating a team, and physiatry is perfectly modeled for that. I direct the Spine Center, which is multidisciplinary, and so we have, you know, several partisan groups. You have neurosurgeons on one side, you have orthopedic surgeons on another side, and physiatry is a perfect specialty, kind of bridge the gap in many different ways, in the inpatient setting, in the outpatient setting. You can really be the person that people come to and really try to soften the differences. So medical directing can take a lot of time. This is probably where I get my most of my frustrations, because there's lots of systems issues. My biggest frustration at our institution is our EMR, our electronic medical record. So that's added a couple hours to my day because I have to more or less type my notes. So it can be a pretty arduous process. The other thing is changing physician behavior. Physicians hardly ever change their behavior, and it's a really big process. So doing that, it can take a lot of time. Of course, there's societal obligations. I feel, being one of Joel's fellows about 12 years ago, that we kind of have a duty to pay back, and it's important to be a member of our national organizations and try to influence other folks as well. But it does take time. It means participating in a call or a meeting, probably at least once a month, if not more. And then, unfortunately, research and so forth has become secondary, but I do have a carve-out of about a day a week for research, and that's one advantage of academics is you can carve out that time and hopefully ramp that up if that's your interest. So you decided on PM&R. You guys love it. These guys all convince you that PM&R is excellent. Now what do you do? If you start early, that's great. If you find out at the end of your third year, which is typically the case, that you want to do PM&R, you're going to follow the pattern of most people where they do a summer or fall elective. And I highly recommend doing an elective as soon as possible in PM&R. So that serves a few purposes. It exposes you further. You can change your mind if you want to, or it can cement your choice. And then the second purpose is that you can get a letter from someone in a timely manner. Because it's really important that you have a letter from a PM&R person when you apply for residencies. So if that's missing because your elective was in September and they didn't get their letter in until December, that's going to be a problem. So trying to really ramp up the time when you do your elective is important. I personally would recommend that you would do an elective inside and outside your institution. You may not have the time to do that, but I think it does give you different perspectives because programs are going to be widely different. And you're not going to know what's different until you see something else. So I would recommend at least two electives in PM&R, one inside and one outside of your institution. If you start earlier, if you know in your first or second year, doing research is put you ahead of other people doesn't necessarily your application, but it really helps. So some of the folks that do a summer externship in a PM&R research lab or a PM&R research clinical setting really have an advantage because they're potentially able to put that on their CVs and so forth, and it shows that you're committed to this field. I think coming to the AAPM&R meeting is helpful. That's not something that I did as a medical student. I didn't even think about it, so I congratulate you guys. You're a lot smarter than me. Choosing programs is something that you'll have to do around this time. So you guys all know that the ARIS application is due November 1st, and you're going to need to decide which programs you're going to select and then which programs you'll interview at. So it means talking to a lot of people. And Now, my personal recommendation is to talk to lots of different people, people with some experience. I think some of the websites and things like that are a little fishy because it's usually one or two people's perspectives. So trying to get a more holistic perspective, I think, is important. And then sometimes, you know, just the banter amongst the interview trail is not a great way to assess programs either. So really trying to get some higher level perspectives, I think, is important when you choose a program because it's going to be a very individual choice. With your ARIS application, you need your dean's letter to be I's dotted, T's crossed, because it's the single most important thing. Your letters of recommendation need to be timely. Again, I've seen lots of applications that I've thrown away because they don't have a PM&R letter. And you may have done a PM&R rotation, but it just didn't get to your application in time. So I strongly recommend doing things early. You do your interviews, and everyone knows how to interview well. Mainly I'm looking to see if you're normal or not. That's my purpose of an interview. If I can, sit around in the kitchen with you and talk for 3 years, because that's essentially what we're doing. Just trying to present yourself as you normally are is, I think, the purpose of the interview. And then we'll talk about a little bit of this in more detail. So with electives, you are auditioning. If you call it an audition elective, or if you don't, it's still an audition. So you, no matter where you are, you're auditioning to different folks, too. You're not only auditioning to the person that's evaluating you, but you're also auditioning to the staff that's around, because inevitably they're going to say, oh, Vaney was such a whatever. So it's really important that you interact with all of the staff, all of the residents, because they're influencing the evaluation process as well. The program coordinator, as you probably know, is one of the most important persons to respect, because they are sometimes making the decision on if you're getting an interview, if you're getting ranked highly. So be very nice to program coordinators. And expose yourself. Most electives are usually designed at one place or another, but the department may be very widespread, and you want to go and try to, if you can, go to other clinics, other faculty members, even PTs in the department, a psychologist in the department that are within the department, because they're sometimes really influencing the decision. So try to arrange time with these non-core people, because they may be more core than you realize. And then if you can do some PM&R research, I think that helps. But, again, not a game changer. So choosing programs, what I tell people is it's a lot easier to choose a program if you know what you want to do more long-term. Sometimes that's hard to know. And so you need a kind of a program that's very diverse. So if you do want to have an academic practice, you want to be a program director or an academic a physiatrist, I think it's good to be from a program that has a good academic reputation, that has some networks, some mentoring opportunities, some research opportunities that may not be there with other programs. But if your goal is to go into private practice, there's a lot of programs that can suit the bill. So if you can envision yourself doing something in 5-10 years, that really helps you choose a program. So a couple other things with the ARIS application. These were questions that Marty solicited from some medical students and what they wanted to hear, and what they thought, what was the most important thing for a program director. This is my personal opinion. Other folks are different. My personal most important part of the application was by far the dean's letter, because the dean's letter compiles your activity over a lot of years. So if you consistently perform in every rotation, that means a lot to me, more so than if you performed well in 2 weeks with a PM&R doctor or whomever else. So if you really consistently performed, I know that you'll consistently perform in the 3 to 4 years of a PM&R residency. So really look at your dean's letter. I think you all have an opportunity to review your dean's letter, so review that and really go through it. See if you can explain away some things that might stand out as red flags, yellow flags, because those questions will be asked when you come for an interview. Why'd you get that D in anatomy and have to retake the class? Things like that. And there may have been reasons, and usually the reasons are very good. So, but you need to look through your dean's letter. I personally try to look at quartiles or class rank. Some dean's letters don't provide that information, but if they do, I find that to be the most helpful information, because GPAs can vary, but quartile or class rank doesn't tend to vary as much. My personal feeling, I think the dean's letters that don't offer a quartile or class rank are not as helpful. So other things we talked about, rehab exposure, rehab letters of recommendations. Board scores are not as important, but if you got a red mark there, that doesn't look great. What we do at Colorado is we actually screen out everyone that's failed boards, and we don't invite them to interview. But there are some programs that don't do that. So it just depends on the program. But, put effort into your boards, because it looks bad if you fail. So during your interview, we talked about the program directors. One of the questions that was asked is how many places should you interview at? I would say around 10. Personally, 10 or more. It can be expensive, but I've had one student that at CU that interviewed at four programs because he wanted to stay in a certain area, and he didn't match. And he was a very good student. So there's definitely some issues if you don't pick enough programs. The follow-up, I don't think this is very important personally. Thank you letters and all that stuff, second looks, I don't think they're that important. But I do think you need to really kind of rehash things and go through your process of evaluation after the fact and talk to your mentors about what's going to be best for you. And then ranking, just a couple tips. I would just make sure you rank both 3- and 4-year programs. So let's say at RIC they have a 3-year track and a 4-year track. You have to rank both of those if you want to make them your odds better of going to that particular place. I think having a transitional year at the place of your residency is best, but there's lots of extenuating circumstances. I don't think it bothers many people where you go for your first year, but it does help some if you know who to consult when you eventually come to your PM&R residency and you actually have a face to the name. Do not rank a program that you won't go to. It's not helpful because you're not going to be happy and you're going to want to go somewhere else or change specialties. And so I personally tell people very strongly, if you don't like a program, don't rank it. And then again, rank at least 7 to 8 programs. This is a somewhat competitive discipline. It's more competitive than it used to be. There's just sheer numbers that are against you a little bit. There's more medical students now than when I was a medical student. There's about the same number of graduate medical education slots. Those 330 slots hasn't changed that much over the years, but there's been, DO schools proliferating. There's at CU we added students, so the odds are just kind of swinging the pendulum. So you got to apply to more programs, I think, nowadays than before. Finally, if I have time. So if you want to be a program director, I think you can do it for sure because it's a thankless job and not many people want to do it. But it has a lot of soft rewards. You're not going to get a huge stipend for it or anything like that. But people really find you as the nurturer of the residency and of residents, and that's a good feeling to know that you really help produce good folks. And I think it's a laudable goal. You need at least 5 years' experience, but there's lots of places where you can become an associate director during that early period and then transition to becoming the program director. You want to find a program that has that potential need, and usually they do because the tenure of most program directors is not very long. You know, we'd like it to be at least 5 years from a national level, but it averages probably less than that. So, you know, develop a curriculum in your first few years of whatever specialty that you're going into. You might want to start some education-based research, you know, competencies and all that kind of stuff. There's lots of avenues for research in this regard. Talk to the residents where you go to and what the needs would be with a good program and what the patches will be. Visit other programs because people do things so differently, and some there are some best practices. And again, you need to define rewards other than just money because you're not going to make a lot of money as a program director. So enjoy the view. We can maybe as a panel talk about fellowships if you're interested in that. But it's a great specialty. Academics has been great to me. I'm very grateful that I've been able to do this. Thanks.